the next 2 hours. Go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, we're so back on a Tuesday. Good morning, everybody. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's James Hamm. And we're rocking with you until noon here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Thank you, everybody, listening on the radio, listening on your free Odyssey app. And, of course, everybody watching on YouTube and Twitch, youtube.com/ESPN1320, twitch.tv/ESPN1320, the chatty house already cracking. And, of course, you can participate in the program on the Elk Grove Kia Talk Line. That's 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320 on the Elk Grove Kia Talk Line. Let me make sure the phone lines are unlocked. They sure are. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Kyle. You said a lot there. When I have to run the show, I don't say any of that.
That's probably, honestly, this is a much bigger, like, discussion about media and the current state of it, but that's probably the way to do it. Probably doing the podcast thing where you just kind of assume that everybody knows what it is and what the deal is, and you just roll through it.
I probably shouldn't do it that way, but, like, I don't have everything written down, so if I don't have it written down, I'm not going to say it, so...
Just full, like, Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, yeah.
Next time I'm out, I'll write a little intro for you. Some bullet points. It'll be easy.
Hey, I still hit all the sponsors, Scooter. I make sure that we talk about Jiffy Lube all the time.
That's all you need.
And you know, we have the Elk Grove Kia call in line.
Yep.
Yeah.
Shout out to the talk line.
We had Mitch came on yesterday. We had Mitch.
Mitch in New Jersey. Very nice.
Mitch in New Jersey.
Wait. Oh, because we had Joe yesterday.
We had Joe, so Jesse and I were in here.
Right, so Joe, I thought you did the calls.
No.
No, God, no. What do you think this is?
No.
I was very surprised.
No.
But that's cool. Cool, man.
I think we had someone in on, we had a call on Friday. Oh, no. On Thursday, where we had to do an extra hour because D'Lo and Casey got caught up in a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse and I begged for people to call. We actually demanded that Ramsey call in, and then we begged for other people to call in, and we had like 3 phone calls.
Excellent.
Yeah. It was a bit of a scramble to get that last hour filled. It was fun.
Yeah. No, it's totally fun. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you until noon. I had a great trip. I went down to Southern California with my wife and I and our group of friends, and we had a great trip. We went to Disneyland on Friday. We went to Universal on Saturday. We watched football all day Sunday, and I was really excited because one of my friends who we went with is my buddy Nate. I have known Nate since I was 7 years old.
Cool.
I was the best man and officiant in his wedding. He was the best man in my wedding. He is one of the best people I know, flat out. Well, he lives in Sacramento. I live out in the Bay Area. We're both Niner guys. He watches every game. He doesn't, like, he listens to the podcast, but he's not like on Twitter, like super analysis, but we text back and forth a little bit during games, but we haven't gotten to watch a football game together since like 2013 when we lived together.
Ooh.
Right. So we haven't gotten to watch a football game, like sit down and watch a game together in a really long time.
Okay.
So on Sunday, 10 a.m. kick, we're hanging out at the Airbnb all day. It's like, dude, we get to watch a Niner game together. This is so fun. To hell with the 49ers, first of all. That was not a fun game to watch. I was so excited to lock in with the homie and one of my very best friends that I will ever have in this lifetime, somebody that I would take a bullet for.
Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, we get to watch a football game. And then we watched that. It was just, bleh. It was just the Niners don't get it on 4th and 2 at the goal line, which we'll talk about in a bit. Vikings run a play, 97-yard tutty to Justin Jefferson, and we looked at each other and we were like, hey, man, this has, well, before that even, we were like, this has 17-13 loss written all over it.
Mm.
Like, just the way that game started. And then that long touchdown, and he's like, 17-13 might have been generous. And lo and behold, 23-17 is your final score. Just not a fun, of all the games, it wasn't even a game where, man, it's a really good game, they just got beat.
No, it was just,
it was ugly. They got beat. They got pushed around.
Fred Warner kept giving them lifelines, and they just kept, like,
God bless Fred Warner, a
phone a friend, and you called the wrong friend.
If Fred Warner was not in that game, the Niners lose by 50.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I totally agree. If Fred Warner wasn't in that game, they probably at least lose by another 10.
He single-handedly prevented, yeah, two scores.
Yeah.
Probably two touchdowns.
Yeah, without any question.
And the Niners' only two touchdowns came off of Fred Warner takeaways.
Man, that pick was so amazing.
It was sick. And the punch out at the goal line? Man.
Yeah, he's...
What a player, but yuck to that entire experience.
He's playing at a whole nother level. I was wondering where you were going to go with this because... You had, I'm so mad at the 49ers on the rundown, and I'll explain. And I didn't know where you were going to go with that. But
yeah, dude.
For them to ruin your personal viewing pleasure with a friend that you don't get to watch football with.
Yeah. Yeah. What? Look, not that they, I don't care that they lost. Teams are going to lose. They haven't won in Minnesota since 1992. I think the Vikings are A, better than people thought they would be, and B, just really well coached.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Flores has given Kyle Shanahan fits. And Brock Purdy fits. I think Kevin O'Connell is one of the five best coaches in the league, just flat out. I thought that going into Sunday, and it certainly didn't do anything to change my mind there. I think Kevin O'Connell's fantastic. I think you look at with some of the defensive talent they have. It was more impressive to me that Sam Darnold did what he did without Justin Jefferson on that last drive. TJ Hockenson out the whole game. Jordan Addison out the whole game. Really, really impressive performance by the Vikings. Like, don't get it twisted. So I don't mind that they lost to Minnesota. I just mind that they played the way they did.
No, I totally get that.
It was yucky, man. They looked on Sunday like I thought they would look in week one. They looked disjointed. They looked out of sorts. They looked like a team that had two of their best players not in training camp. Trent Williams had a bad game. Brandon Ayuk is getting open. He's there. They're just not getting the ball to him. Debo Samuel gets hurt. Just yuck. Yuck to all of it. Two thumbs down to the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, I agree. We talked about it a lot yesterday. They were not impressive. Like, so many facets of the game that they were bad. Like, the special teams, they were so bad. The Mitch Wisnowski play where he just stood there and, like, didn't want to go put his hand on the guy.
And you have Robert Beal, the up man, just olaying the block?
Yeah, like, what in the world? And then on top of that, Minnesota had that one of the stupidest plays I've ever seen, where the guy caught the ball at the one and then just, like, strolled into the end zone. I almost expected, like, dude,
Dallas,
like,
Turner.
Like the Bernie Lean or something, just walk into the end zone, like, celebrating himself, like, hey, bro, you still have the ball. What are you doing?
It was really like, bad. Oh, really, so really bad look for the Vikings on special teams. I want to go through some of the stuff. I don't want to do a recap of the game, obviously, because it happened 2 days ago. But we did get an announcement yesterday from Kyle Shanahan. And I want to talk about the Raiders as well. That's coming up. And we'll also talk about last night's Falcons-Eagles thriller on Monday Night Football. We'll have a little Sacramento Kings check-in as well. But I'm angry at the 49ers, so that's what we're starting with. We got an announcement yesterday from head coach Kyle Shanahan on his conference call that wide receiver Debo Samuel suffered a calf strain late in the game. It was on that, like, slant at the end of the game where they needed a bunch of yards, and they threw a slant to Debo, which is whatever. He got hurt on that play. He's out a couple of weeks, according to Kyle Shanahan. So the 49ers offense now has no Debo Samuel. No Christian McCaffrey. Brandon Ayuk, who is currently not a productive player.
75-80% of Brandon Ayuk.
Kyle Shanahan said he's playing, he's at 100%, but he's only playing about 85% of his snaps. And whatever has happened with Brandon Ayuk and Brock Purdy, and maybe there's a chemistry thing there that Purdy's a little bit rusty with him, he's got to start throwing him the damn ball.
Mm-hmm.
He's open. Go watch. You can't really see it on the TV copy, but I've seen people posting the all-22s, and I was talking with people who were at the game in the press box where they can see that view, and it's like, there are people open. That was an issue that Brock Purdy had on Sunday, was just letting it rip. But it's Brandon Ayuk now.
Mm-hmm.
It's George Kittle and Jordan Mason.
Juwan Jennings.
You have Juwan Jennings. Like, there's plenty there to withstand this.
Yep.
They're just going to have to go about their offense a little bit differently.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, Juszczyk has become a much bigger player.
Yeah.
But that really does limit you. Unless he's lining up in the backfield by himself And you have, but then you're not fearing that he's going to run at all because he doesn't run the ball hardly ever.
No.
So you're hoping that you're able to fool somebody, but I don't know who you're fooling there. So right. It almost feels like when you have Mason in the game, you're either running or he's staying in the block. And then when you have Juszczyk in the game, you know, he is going out into the pass pattern. Uh-huh. But if you're just to have him, you know, he's just going to be running out for passes. Uh-huh. He's not. So you're limited as opposed to McCaffrey, where when McCaffrey's in the game, you have no idea what McCaffrey's going to do.
Sure.
Right. So like, I feel like you're stripping down a little bit of like sort of what Kyle Shanahan's like options are, mm-hmm. like what he can do to like disguise anything. And mm-hmm. realistically, they don't have anything to disguise. I think even when they put Debo in the backfield, you're like, okay, at least you know Debo can do a couple of things here. Well, that's not the case with Mason. Like, he's caught, mm-hmm. what, one ball in each of the first two games. I think that might be the next step. Like, if they can, like, get him out and have him catch even, like, a couple of little dump screens or sure. something, just to, like, break up the idea of what they're about to do,
mm-hmm.
It's a big problem. I mentioned this yesterday. I thought the other thing that Mason did really well is he picked up blitzes. And
oh, like crazy, yeah.
2 weeks in a row where I thought he was just absolutely tremendous mm-hmm. as a blocker for Purdy in the backfield. So
yeah, man, that was I think a big reason he wasn't playing before. But no, I agree with you. That's something that he did really well on Sunday, and that's part of the reason the Vikings defense is difficult, because those easy checkdowns to the running back aren't there because your running back is staying in the block.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're bringing a ton of pressure, and they're bringing blitzes from all these different angles, and you just don't get the opportunity to just, oh, yep, hey, there it is, quick dump off, and there's 8 free yards. That's just not available. We're going to learn a lot about Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy here in the next couple of weeks.
Totally.
Because you don't have that element, like you just said, that element of Debo Samuel and the variants of things he can do with mm-hmm. his skill set. Without Christian McCaffrey, basically a positionless player. You know, you hear broadcasters all the time say that, well, if Christian McCaffrey was just a slot receiver, he'd be a Pro Bowler as a slot receiver. That's not going to be Jordan Mason or anyone else on the Niners roster. That's what makes Christian McCaffrey different. They don't have that. Jordan Mason might be able to physically catch the ball, but running a route and getting open, routing up a corner from the slot is not like an easy thing.
No.
So we're going to basically watch Kyle Shanahan now have to adapt his offense to not having this element of surprise with, oh, hey, Christian McCaffrey's lined up in the backfield with 2 tight ends, but hey, actually, this is going to be a 5-wide situation because watch how we're going to change the formation with pre-snap motion.
Mm-hmm.
That element of surprise is no longer there. The element of Debo Samuel in the backfield or Debo Samuel on jet sweeps is no longer there. You're going to have to run what looks like a more traditional offense. And to your point about Kyle Juszczyk, man, Kyle Juszczyk is super valuable to the 49ers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is without question. But his value as a playmaker comes from, oh, shoot. Okay, got to cover McCaffrey over there. Okay, Debo's over there. Ayuk's now on this in-breaker deep in behind, and you're a linebacker, so you're trying to get enough depth to make sure that you're covering up that play. Oh, and now you've forgotten about Kyle Juszczyk, who's just wide open running a wheel route.
He's the 7th thing you're worried about.
Right, he's ostensibly their 2nd tight end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if it's just Kyle Juszczyk lining up out wide, that is a lot less dangerous than Kyle Juszczyk's lining up out wide, oh shoot, and there's Christian McCaffrey and Debo Samuel, and there's all these other all-pros who are also split out. So we're going to learn a lot about what Kyle Shanahan has in his bag with a more quote-unquote normal-looking offense.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see what Brock Purdy has in his bag without the safety blanket of Debo Samuel, which is up 10 targets on Sunday. That was a lot of, oh, shoot, don't know where to go with it. Let me throw it to Debo. And Debo, honestly, making a couple of remarkable catches in traffic, up high, climbing the ladder to get him. I thought Debo was really good on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's not there anymore. And you still have Brandon Ayuk. You still have George Kittle. You still have Jordan Mason. There's still plenty there offensively. This isn't going to be excuse time for the 49ers, because now you have Brandon Ayuk and Brock Purdy. That is your duo of the future. That is your, hey, Brandon Ayuk just got his contract. Brock Purdy, after this season, is going to get his contract. They're going to be 2 highly paid players that the Niners are basically leaning on to be the foundation of their offense for at least the next half decade and potentially more. So here's your chance. Here's your first opportunity to see what the 49ers offense looks like when it's Brock Purdy, Brandon Ayuk, and no Deebo Samuel, and no Christian McCaffrey, and a little bit more like what the offense is probably going to look like in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I really do wonder, can they get Cowing involved? Can they get someone else involved that can actually do something? And, you know, he's the guy who, number one, I think can extend the defense. He can, mm-hmm. You can send him out. Mm-hmm. I think you can get him on a wide receiver screen, and I think you can get him on an end around. I don't mm-hmm. want him doing complex routes over the middle. I don't want that. Even the quick slants right now, I don't think he's ready. If you're going to do that, then bring in Conley. That's fine.
Sure.
But, you know, for the sort of like the trick plays that Deebo does, I'm okay with him. Like, let's see what he's got. He's super fast. Like, get him on the end around. Get him on a wide receiver screen. Like, send a couple of streaks down the sidelines. Mm-hmm. Just whatever you can to try to use him effectively and sort of in, like, his role. I think that's the problem. Like, Jennings is very specific. He's just a, he's almost like, in a lot of senses, he's almost like a second tight end. Like,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big, huge mm-hmm. target. He's not going to get a ton of separation, but mm-hmm. he is a guy that can handle a ball in space and can box out a little bit, you mm-hmm. know, and go get you a first down for sure. But he's not like a breakaway guy, and Ayuk is a little bit of a breakaway guy, but not really. So, mm-hmm. like, how are you going to manage this? And it's complicated, man. This is not where the Niners thought they would be, but it also could make them really, really strong in the second half of the season if they can survive this first blip on the radar.
Yeah. And that's they have, I've said it a couple of times, I'll say it again, they have the personnel to do it. It's just we haven't, because when Deebo Samuel went out in Brock Purdy's rookie year, he went out against Tampa Bay, so that was Brock Purdy's first start. And Purdy was fine without Deebo. But that was with everybody else in it. By that time, Christian McCaffrey was fully up to speed in the offense. You had Brandon Ayuk still. You still had George Kittle. It's no Deebo, but everything else was good to go. Learning to survive without Christian McCaffrey, I thought, was going to be a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But it was made a little bit easier because you had a versatile player like Deebo Samuel. Well, now Deebo Samuel's out. That versatility is gone. Like George Kittle, God bless him, blocking, pass catching, he's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not the same type of playmaking threat that CMC and Deebo are. So you're going to learn now, okay, hey, Brandon Ayuk, you got $30 million a year. Here's 12 targets. Here's 15 targets. What are you going to do with it? Because you go look down in Southern California at the 49ers' next opponent. No Puka Nacua. No Cooper Kupp.
Nope.
But hey, here's DeMarcus Robinson out of nowhere. Here's Tyler Johnson just out of nowhere is a big factor in week one. They create Jordan Whittington is now a guy that everybody's like, yeah, hey, in fantasy football, this is the guy. This is the guy you're going to want, because they're just churning these receivers out, and that's great. I'd like to see Kyle Shanahan do the same thing. I'd like to see Kyle Shanahan break from whatever mold that they had with their offense and create an offense that, yeah, hey, Juwan Jennings can thrive, that, hey, makes life easier on Brandon Ayuk, because Brandon Ayuk is going to see double coverage. He's going to see brackets. He's going to see everything under the sun to make sure he's not beating the opposing team, which, okay, A, can you take advantage of that mm-hmm. with your other weapons? But B, Ayuk still got to get open. The onus is still on Brandon Ayuk to create opportunities for himself when opposing teams are defending him that way, because if it was that easy, every team would just take away a team's top receiver, and you can't do that because the top receivers are too good.
Yep.
So now we need to see it from Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah, he definitely has to figure out a way to get open. Like, you can tell, like, whatever, it's so hard to emulate, like, a professional football situation.
Yeah, man.
And you're seeing, like, it doesn't matter how much he worked out or how much he was doing off the field stuff with other people, you just can't replicate, number one, the chemistry, number two, the explosiveness that you need against NFL defensive backs, and number mm-hmm. three, like, what happened in week one where just you're not practicing running and diving to the corner with your buds out on some field down the street.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what you're doing. You're doing a bunch of routes and you're doing all your footwork, and you're doing making sure that you're precise in your routes and all that stuff. You're not sitting there diving with a guy on your hip and
mm-hmm.
like 40,000-50,000 fans and the ball's fading into the corner and you got to go get it. Like, it's really tough to catch up
mm-hmm.
and it's on him. it's his fault that he's in this situation. But at some point, you know, we've got to see what exactly he's got and if he can be the receiver he was before, because at this point they need it. I think the one reprieve, Kyle, is that they get the Rams this weekend, who are just beyond beat up. You want to talk about the Niners being beat up? Mm-hmm. The Rams are, I mean,
the Rams are in a bad way right now.
Yeah, their whole offensive line, like two of their, I think both their guards are out, plus,
I think they're
safeties?
Down to their third and fourth string tackles, too.
Yeah, and their safeties are out. Like, they're
in a bad spot.
Yeah, they're in a really bad spot. And then you follow that up with the Patriots, who just aren't very good. They're gritty, but they're not very good. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you can survive this early season thing, especially with who the Rams are now versus who we thought the Rams might be 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
They're a much different team.
I can't believe how badly they got beat down by Arizona.
There's just been weird beatdowns, man. What the Saints are doing to people? Just like what?
Shout out to Clint Kubiak, man.
I guess there's just like some crazy things that are happening where I can't believe that guy just got punched like that.
Nobody in the NFL can score right now except for the Saints. Just having no problem. Everyone else struggling to put up points.
Yeah.
He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. If you want to hit the Elk Grove Kia talk line, do so. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. Who has to step up the most with Debo Samuel out? I want your answer to that at the Elk Grove Kia talk line. Like I said, 916-909-1320. James, who are you looking for to step up the most for the 49ers with no Debo Samuel?
I mean, I think Ayuk is the easy one.
Sure.
But realistically, Brock Purdy needs to show that he's that guy right now.
That is, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's it. Like Brandon Ayuk, no doubt, but we know what Brandon Ayuk can do.
Yeah.
To me, the problem with Brandon Ayuk's production, particularly last week, easy for me to say, was Brock. Purdy was not good on Sunday.
Yeah.
He took 6 sacks. I think maybe 2 of them were on the offensive line. He was indecisive. He looked shaky in the pocket. He said after the game that Brian Flores' defense had him confused.
Mm.
He was not good. And this is where, okay, that's fine. He can have a bad game. That happens in the NFL. Guys have bad games. That's fine. But we've seen Purdy now, who is good in week 1, showed command of the offense, and that's great. They ran through the Jets, and they kicked 6 field goals, and they win 32-19. That's great. But then you go to Minnesota, and he's not nearly as effective. And now we have 2 games in a row where you're looking and going, okay, he was pretty good in week 1. Not great, but pretty good. And then week 2, he was bad. And both of these games have been without Christian McCaffrey. His first ever starts without Christian McCaffrey. So this, to me, is a massive stretch for him and for the 49ers when it comes to the decision-making process of extending him, because if Brock Purdy is going to continue to struggle as long as Christian McCaffrey is out and as long as Debo Samuel is out, then I have massive question marks about making this guy the franchise quarterback for the next decade.
Yeah. I would say this, though, Kyle. Like, he did go 28 of 34 for 319 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the pick wasn't good, but the initial pick was a bobble, right?
It was into traffic. It was behind the receiver. It was not a good throw.
Yeah, it wasn't a good throw. The second fumble / pick, whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
That was just like one of those things that happened, but it can't happen in that situation.
Nope.
Especially, aren't they in a dome? Like.
Yeah, apparently it was more humid than normal and he had the ball slip out. Here's the I have never watched a quarterback that I go, wow, that quarterback is awesome. I have never seen them do that. I've seen Jimmy Garoppolo do that. I've seen like Matt Ryan do that. I've seen like Will Levis do it. I've now seen Brock Purdy do it. I've never seen Patrick Mahomes. I'm sure it's happened to him. I've never seen it happen.
Okay.
Anecdotally, that only happens to bad quarterback.
I'm not putting him in that. Like, we were texting back and forth early in the game. I thought he looked so comfortable in the pocket that it was almost too comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, he reminded me of Tom Brady, the way that Brady would just stand back there and just like, the whole world is crashing around you. There's flames everywhere. And you're just like, chill, I'm here. Yeah. But then it came to a point where it's like, ooh, how are you going to throw off that position? Mm-hmm. And he threw some decent balls.
Mm-hmm.
But I also felt like there came a moment where the game speed started to crank up. The pressure started to pick up. and he didn't adjust from his cool, calm, and collective to like literally, you know, the dude in front of you's hair is on fire and you're, you've got to figure out a way to like be more.
I was struggling to decide because I was with you. We were texting a little bit during the game. Purdy looked so good early in the game, standing in the pocket, moving around, maneuvering inside the pocket. But as the game went on, I became less certain that, oh man, look at that, cool, calm, and collected versus, oh, he doesn't know what he's seeing.
Yes.
He's not calm and like, okay, I'm surveying. He's just staring into the abyss.
Yes.
He's not seeing anything. He's standing there because he doesn't know what else to do.
That, yeah.
And there was one play in particular that... It was the third down play where he scrambled all around and then found Ayuk on the sideline. Or, I'm sorry, Debo on the sideline. And they reviewed it because Debo's foot might have come up. And he had scrambled around all before that and then made that throw. And I saw somebody in 49ers media be like, wow, add that one to Brock Purdy's highlight reel. And I'm like, absolutely not, dude. That was not a good quarterback play. He needed to get rid of that a long time ago. He created that pressure for himself. And okay, he polished the turd or whatever, but it wasn't a good play.
No.
And
just the result worked out.
Right. And that was a little bit what I had creep into my mind on Sunday was, man, he's had so much good luck with interceptions and with bobbles and things falling on the ground where, oh, that should have been a pick, but it wasn't. That interception that Minnesota had felt like the kind of ball that hits the ground for him last year. And then you watch that play with the throw to Debo on the sideline. It's like, man, that was not,
yeah.
So I'm not hitting the panic button. I'm still saying if they had to pay him today, they should.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to learn so, so much about Brock Purdy over the next couple of games with Debo Samuel. He has to be the guy for the 49ers. He just has to.
Yeah. I'm with you.
There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, and we talked about this. We got to go.
What did we talk about?
There are certain players in the league that you have this feeling that they can win a game at any time.
Mm-hmm.
They also can lose a whole bunch of games because they're not very good.
Mm-hmm.
But they have this like little weird ingredient that they can go win a game for you.
Yep.
Gardner Minshew, for some reason, has that.
Gangster.
It's Minshew magic. Yep. I don't know what it is. Yep. I need Brock Purdy to find it like right now.
Right there with you.
Yeah.
Right there with you. We'll keep talking about that. We'll talk about Gardner Minshew and the Las Vegas Raiders victory over the Baltimore Ravens. A couple of interesting things from that game. We'll have more from the Niner game, of course. We'll talk about a thriller on Monday Night Football last night at Sacramento Kings check-in. Tons to get to before noon. We got a break now. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I love having these windows right here. I never know anybody who walks by that isn't one of our coworkers, but you can tell when it's like somebody important.
Yeah.
Because they're always like eight people deep.
Yeah, they have their entourage.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh. I don't even know who that was.
There was, I was talking to one of the brand managers here the other day because he was here with somebody walking around, and I was talking to him later, and he mentions that the person was just like the head of a record label who's just here.
Oh.
Just walking around, hanging out.
Well, that is, sure. The weird thing is too, don't we have like, we have the FBI come in like once a month?
Do they still do that? I know that was a bit on a show that's no longer at our cluster.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
anyways, that was just, I got super distracted when the segment was opening up because a bunch of people walked by that I didn't know. But we are back here on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. James Hamm there, Kyle Madsen here. Monday Night Football last night, we were talking about this a little bit at the break with the Jason Kelce back in Philly thing, because Jason Kelce working at ESPN now.
Yeah.
It felt very much like a Eagles-centric broadcast. Not that I, as a unbiased viewer, I didn't care that much.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jason Kelce is a mostly entertaining guy. But if I was a Falcons fan, watching that game, and you're going back and forth, and you're playing really well on the road in Philly, and Kirk Cousins is finally like playing like you thought Kirk Cousins would, and man, your defense is playing awesome, and there's all these reasons to be excited as a Falcons fan, and then you're just getting beat over the head with Jason Kelce and the Eagles. That would have made me upset. I would not have liked that if I was a Falcons fan.
Okay, I get that. I get that, but I think a dose of him would have been fine. I think getting like, you know, like 8 shots deep, you know, is like, hey, like, what are we doing here? And like, look, I liked what a lot of what he was doing. I like his energy, and I think he's funny, and I think he actually can do that job.
Yeah, but I totally agree with you.
But he's not. He doesn't have any like. It's not just like polished as a like commentator, because you kind of don't want that, because that's what happens when like Tony Romo's great in the first like year. After year one, everyone else is like, okay, I got to mute this. I can't listen to this anymore. Right. With Kelce, it's almost like he was watching the game like, hey, did you see that? That looked like it might've been offsides. And Troy Aikman's trying to talk, and it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, throwing him into a 3-man booth is weird. But they did that. I think they only did that because it was the Eagles.
No,
it was
Jason
Kelce. It was like, let's interview an Eagles legend.
Yeah.
Like, ugh. Again, as a neutral observer who mostly enjoys Jason Kelce, I didn't mind it at all.
Okay.
But if I was a Falcons fan and I'm watching the Falcons cruise down the field and score the go-ahead touchdown late and then hold on to get the game-winning interception on the Eagles' last drive, and all I heard about all game was Jason Kelce, I'd have been mad.
I get that. I do think he was very complimentary of like their line play. He kept looking at their line and explaining what they were doing that was positive. And I think a lot of that was totally cool, because it's an aspect of the game that we don't get all the time. But yeah, I just needed less. And
yeah, that's all. Just less of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it could have been like one segment or two segments. You know, it was a short drive. Let's go to the break. We'll bring it back. And then, hey, sure, thanks for coming. But then it was like I was saying during the break, it felt like, you know, you throw a party and, you know, it gets everyone else is cleared out.
Yeah.
Except for like one dude who's just still there, and you start cleaning up, and it's like, let me help you. And you're like, yeah, you can help by like putting your shoes on and leaving.
Yeah.
Like that's how you can help us. But that's not what happens. He like sits there and like grabs a garbage bag and starts helping. You're like, yeah. Okay, well, we're getting a little tired here.
We're cleaning up just enough to go to bed.
Yes.
We're not doing the whole thing tonight. Get the hell out of my house.
Yeah. That's what it kind of felt like. You're like, hey, man, I think it's time. I think it's time for you to go.
Yeah. I felt so bad for Saquon Barkley last night. If you missed it, Eagles up 18-15, late fourth quarter, 3rd and 3. Perfect play call. It's Saquon Barkley in the flat. Jalen Hurts makes a perfect throw. Saquon Barkley needs to catch it. Turn up field. He has the angle on the defender. He's going to get a first down and more. Ball game's going to be over. And he drops it. And it's one of those plays that Eagles fans are going to remember. Eagles fans are going to think about it. But by week 10, no Eagles fan is going to be like, well, this season, there will be some. But the consensus among Eagles fans is not going to be like, this season went off the rails because of Saquon's drop. You and I are going to forget about it probably tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Saquon Barkley is going to think about that play until he's dead. I'm dead serious, dude.
Yeah, probably.
That's going to exist. There are so many plays I can go, and again, I didn't play sports at any kind of high level, but there's still those plays that sit back there like, one of them, slow pitch softball. Okay, that's the level of play we're talking. Beer league softball is what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still like those things that you think about at night that just kind of keep you awake. This is one of them. This is one of them. That and like existence and stuff. But this is another one. Championship game, 2 outs. Line drive right at me off the top of my glove.
Oh.
Into left center field, base hit. We eventually win the game, but I would have caught the 3rd out. And instead, the 3rd out was a fly out to left center. I remember it very vividly.
Stuff
because it should have been me that sticks out. And then when I was like 10, we almost turned a double play, which is unheard of in like 10-year-old pony baseball.
Yep.
And second baseman flips to short, throws it across and throws a little low, and I just missed it.
Oh,
just missed it. Ball clangs off the fence. Shortstop goes, oh, Kyle. It is again, this is 25 years ago, and it's still just seared into my brain.
He yelled at you.
Yeah, as he should have. I should have caught it. So I feel so bad when a play like that happens because inconsequential. It's week two. They lost one game. The Eagles are still going to be good. They're going to be fine. Saquon Barkley is going to be fine. He's going to have a bunch of yards. He's going to score a bunch of touchdowns. But that play, when Saquon Barkley is like 90, is going to be like, oh my God, that drop against the Falcons.
Yeah.
It's going to live there forever. I feel so bad for Saquon now.
Yeah. It's tough, especially he was phenomenal. He's been phenomenal the first 2 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, look at how it was all the Giants' fault. And rightfully so, it was the Giants' fault. Like, whatever happened with Saquon there, like, they stopped giving him opportunity to have success because everything else there is a total mess.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you watch, he also had the play where he got tackled at the half-foot line. You know, there's all of these little things that, like, he would normally... So while he's having a really good, like, rebirth there in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. you're still left with just these little tiny, like, and I think it's tough because at a certain point, you know, like, he got used to not having success. Mm-hmm. And when you're losing again and again and again, these little tiny details, sometimes you start to slip on how much they matter.
Yeah.
And then you get into a situation where all of a sudden you could be really good again and your team can be great and you can be great again. And it's like the first 2 weeks, there's going to come a point where this dude just looks like one of the best backs in football without any question again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how long it'll last because, you know, he's getting up there in age. But I think a little bit of complacency from a couple of years of bad play in New York is sure. Probably he needs to shake that rust off.
Yeah. I still believe in Saquon.
Yeah.
Don't drop him in fantasy just yet. You can drop Christian Kirk, though. If
drop
you
him.
Accidentally auto-drafted him, you can go ahead and do that. Between the Falcons and Eagles, which team do you believe in more?
Oh.
Because I so badly don't want to buy the Falcons, and I so badly believed in a Eagles kind of bounce back this year. I didn't think they were going to win 15 games or anything crazy like that, but I thought we'd see a little bit of a bounce back from them this year. But after last night, it's really hard not to buy the Falcons.
Yeah, but didn't they have just a horrible week one?
Yeah, but it was Kirk Cousins. He's coming back from the Achilles thing.
Yeah.
Still a little bit rusty. You saw him last night on that last drive. He was awesome, and I think the Eagles helped out a little bit, leaving a couple of big plays on the field. But, man, I Falcons defense looks really good. I'm a believer in Kirk Cousins. I wouldn't pick him to win the Super Bowl, but I'm a believer that Kirk Cousins can win you games.
Yeah, for sure.
And man, it's so, I think I still lean Eagles just because I've seen them go to the Super Bowl before. I've not seen Kirk Cousins do that, but I buy the Falcons a lot more after last night than I did after week one.
Okay. I can get behind that. I mean,
week one's weird.
Yeah, so week one is weird, but I'm not sure that both of these teams just aren't mid. Like, both of them?
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
And we just had, like, a battle of, you know, two average teams that just happen to be at the same exact level. I don't like that that Darnell Mooney is got 7 targets in a game. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think there were, like, multiple times where you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem. I don't like that they've got players like Drake London and Kyle Pitts who you're still waiting for them to prove that they are, like,
are
who
we
they
sure?
Are.
Hey, are we sure, just real quick, are we sure Kyle Pitts is good?
No, I don't think he's good. No.
Because at some point, I know he caught a touchdown last week, and if you're not a fantasy football person, Kyle Pitts has been the bane of fantasy football players' existence because he has 1,000 yards as a rookie and then just couldn't find the end zone over his next couple of years.
Well, even as a rookie, he had 68 catches, 1,026 yards, but he only had one touchdown.
One. And how many does he have in his career now, like 4?
He's got 7 total. So he had 2 in year 2, 3 in year 3. I expect him to have 4 in year 4. But
he has one so far, right?
Yeah, he's got one, but he's got 6 catches for 46 yards for 2 weeks.
I mean,
and you just like
at some point, it was the quarterback, then it was the play caller, then it was both. It's like, all right, well, you got new quarterback, new play caller, and he has 6 for 46 in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just not the messiah of tight ends that everybody thought he was going to be.
No, I just think he's not great. That's at the end of the day. And it feels like every time you give up on him, that's when he busts out for like 120 yards. But you didn't start him or you had already waived him because he just isn't scoring touchdowns at all. And as a tight end, if you're playing fantasy sports, I'm okay with a tight end catching for 30 yards every week as long as he's catching a touchdown. You know, 8 to 10 weeks.
Yeah.
That's fine for me.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can't have is for you to not score touchdowns and for you to be spotty as far as you know, 1 week to the next, what you're going to get. Their whole team kind of feels like a bunch of guys who haven't quite figured out how to live up to their hype, like Darnell mm-hmm. Mooney, like Drake London, like Ray McLeod, like Kyle Pitts. Like,
John Robinson's good.
No, he's good, but even that, like, is he as good as everyone thought he would be? And I think we're still waiting to see if he's going to be as good. And like, maybe I'm wrong. You know, he was solid, but 976 yards last year, only 4 touchdowns rushing.
14 for 97 last night. That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was really good last year. And I think he is starting to arrive right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm not convinced that overall that team is great.
Yeah.
Right?
No. And not great. Definitely not great.
Yeah.
But I'm buying into it more. Like, I see the vision more.
Yeah.
But to your point, 7 targets for Darnell Mooney is not a sustainable recipe for offensive success, I don't think.
No, that's not ideal. And then if you look at the other side, that's where I would kind of believe in Philadelphia a little bit more because A.J. Brown was hurt and didn't play.
Yeah, exactly.
And when that dude's on the field, he's a beast.
Yeah, and Hurts last night, 13 carries for 85 yards. Like, that's where they're going to be at their most impactful.
Yeah.
Is when Jalen Hurts is creating havoc like that. With his legs.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Leaning Eagles, but man, I'm much more apt to buy the Falcons after last night's game. Real quick, starting five trailer is out.
Yep.
That dropped this morning. I want to get to the Raider game here in a second. But the trailer for starting five on Netflix, that's the basketball series, is going to follow around Domantas Sabonis, LeBron James, Anthony Edwards, Jimmy Butler, and Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
Anything stick out to you? Anything special, or just a good trailer?
I thought it was just a really, really cool trailer. Like,
fired up.
Yeah, they're gonna have to build that show out, but I think that they've proven that they don't have lag, that they know how to make it intriguing and you know, really sort of bring something out differently mm-hmm. in these players that you had no idea.
Yep.
So I'm super excited because I do think it's going to be a fun watch and I'm excited for Domas to sort of have sort of his day in the sun
mm-hmm.
and maybe that will have an impact on things like All-Star voting. Maybe it'll have impact on all NBA sure. balloting and people, how people around the basketball world think of him.
Yeah.
Because he's really, really good.
Good player.
Yeah, you look at his stats. His stats say he's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, but very few players have averaged like 19 and almost 14 and
mm-hmm.
8,
mm-hmm.
like ever.
Yeah,
and he's sitting here doing like magical things. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, shows like this can have an impact. Sure hope it does for Domas. All right, the Raiders got a gritty ass win on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this a little bit before the show. Vegas 26, Ravens 23. Again, I don't want to do a recap. But it was one of those games that wasn't pretty. It wasn't like, man, what an awesome football game. But I have watched the Ravens for, it feels like my entire life, just grind teams into dust.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like they were going to do that to the Raiders. And then the Raiders just didn't get grinded into dust. They just outplayed them for the last quarter. And that to me is why Gardner Minshew starts. That
yes.
game right there. Because you mentioned this earlier when we were talking about Brock Purdy and how he needs to have a little bit of this. There just aren't that many dudes in the NFL playing quarterback right now who would have played as well as Gardner Minshew did down the stretch and done the things like, all right, hey, just going to force feed Davante Adams. It's just going to force feed Brock Bowers. Here you go. These are our two best pass catchers right now. They're going to win us this game. No running game to speak of. What'd they run for? 27 yards?
Yes.
You ran for 27 yards on 5, 14, 17 carries?
17 carries.
17 for 27, and you go into Baltimore and you beat the Ravens? That's crazy impressive.
Yeah.
And while I talked about Gardner Minshew early in the year and thought that he should start, and maybe oversold it a little bit, that game right there on Sunday is why he's in there. Because I don't think Aiden O'Connell wins him that game.
No, I mean, you can almost know that Aiden O'Connell is not going to win that game.
No.
Gardner Minshew, he's not going to do it every week. And there are going to be weeks where you just like throw things at the TV,
mm-hmm.
and just say, why is he your quarterback? But then there are these weeks where he just, when you say it was a grind out, he is a gritty player.
Yep.
And he finds ways to win. And it's something that not every player in the NFL has,
mm-hmm.
not every quarterback has. And I, you know, kind of what separates like the guys that get jobs where you're like, man, are we really recycling Gardner Minshew? And it's like, yeah, you're going to recycle him because he finds a way. And if you have a great defense, he can be a guy who, again, he's going to lose you a game or two, but he might also win you four or five that you weren't going to win just by keeping you in there and then making one or two plays that matter.
That's it. Gardner Minshew in the fourth quarter, 9 of 13 for a 126 and a touchdown.
Mm.
That's just gangster, dude.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Davante Adams, 4 for 86 and a touchdown in that last quarter on 6 targets. Brock Bowers, 3 catches on 3 targets for 31 yards. Brock Bowers continues to be incredible. Man, I just, as unimpressed as I was with the Raiders and Antonio Pierce in week one, I am impressed with week two. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
As disappointed as I was, I'm that amount impressed with week two. That was a gutsy ass. Derrick Henry scored early in the on the one of the first drives of the fourth quarter. Maybe it might have been Baltimore's first drive of the fourth quarter. But they go up 23-13, and I'm watching that and I'm going, oh, it's ball game.
Oh yeah.
The Raiders aren't scoring 10 points here in 12 minutes.
No, I thought they were cooked.
Yeah, this is, and even if they do score, I don't think they're going to get another stop. And they just kept scoring and getting stops.
Yeah,
it was incredible. Shout out to the Raiders, man. That was a really fun game.
Thoroughly enjoyed watching Max Crosby play. And then
he's so sick.
We talked about this yesterday, Jesse and I. Is it Wilkinson?
Christian Wilkins?
Yeah, Christian Wilkins. Mm-hmm. He jumped.
Dolphins legend.
He jumped over Max Crosby after his late sack. Did you see that?
No.
He ran over.
I saw the sack. I did not see the...
Jumped up in the air, lifted his right leg, and went over the top of Max Crosby, who's 6'5", plus, let's say, 6'7", with a helmet on.
Mm.
Like,
got
that
over him.
Big old dude
yeah.
leaped over the top of Max Crosby. What an incredible athlete.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. You brought up the Brock Bowers and Davante Adams
mm-hmm.
situation. Did you see what Geno Smith did in the Seattle game?
Refresh my memory.
This is wild. So DK Metcalf and Jaxon Smith
and Jigba.
DK Metcalf had 14 targets and Jigba had 16. 30 targets between
two
his
dudes?
Two primary receivers. One of them finished with 10 catches. The other finished with 12. They both broke 100 yards.
On how many attempts?
He was 22 of 30 to those two.
Oh my God.
And of those, and he went 33 of 44. But the fact that he, like, if you're in it and you're sitting there fighting, and I don't care how good or bad the Patriots are, I don't care because I don't think Seattle's very good at all. But when you're in it, man, go to your stars.
Throw it to your dudes, man.
Throw it to your dudes. And then when you need a first down, go hit Tyler Lockett, because that's exactly what happened. He mm-hmm. got the big first down that they needed to like keep a drive going. But absolutely crazy, because it's sort of like the Brock Bowers and Davante Adams thing where, like, man, like, if you're going to go down and you're going to lose a game, you better go down throwing it to the best possible weapons that you have, and sure enough, they didn't.
Would so much rather be throwing it to Davante Adams and Brock Bowers than Trey Tucker.
Yeah.
Like, God love Trey Tucker, but down 10 fourth quarter, it's Davante Adams and Brock Bowers time.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. I think the Raiders are going to have multiple dudes in awards conversations this year.
You think so?
I think Max Crosby is just going to perennially, for the next 4 or 5 years, be in the DPOY conversation.
It's just tough because... TJ Watt and Hutchinson exist.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of Myles Garrett and Nick Bosa, and honestly, Fred Warner is probably going to be in the DPOY conversation this year. But dude, Max Crosby is going to be in that conversation every single year.
Oh no,
he's one of the best edge rushers in the sport.
Yeah, he's incredible. Yeah, it's just so intense.
So I think he's a legit DPOY guy. And then even with Malik Nabers going for, what is it, 10 and 100? What did he finish with? He's the youngest player ever to have 10 catches and 100 yards in a game. I know that.
Oh, wow.
10 for 127 and a touchdown. 18 targets for Malik Nabers. 18 of Daniel Jones' 28 passes went to the rookie.
Wow.
And then, of course, we had the big blow-up game for Marvin Harrison Jr. We had 2 touchdowns on 2 catches in the first like 8 minutes.
Yeah, he was tremendous early on.
Four for 130 and 2 touchdowns.
And the crazy thing, I think they talked to him afterwards, and didn't Kyler Murray throw four incompletions?
Yeah.
On the day?
Yeah.
All 4 were to him.
Yeah.
And he was very upset with himself after the game.
17 of 21 for Kyler Murray, 8 targets, 4 catches for Marvin Harrison Jr. But even with Malik Nabers breaking out in week 2, even with Marvin Harrison Jr. breaking out in week 2, I don't think a rookie quarterback is playing well enough yet to be in the Offensive Rookie of the Year conversation.
No.
Which means you're going to get and I don't think there's a running back who's a rookie who's doing so.
No, Jalen Daniels is the only quarterback that's playing even somewhat well.
And I don't think he's going to be the Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think Brock Bowers is going to be in the conversation all year.
Yep.
First tight end ever with 5 catches and 50-plus yards in his first 2 games.
Wow.
And clearly just a go-to target for Gardner Minshew already. Like, the target share is going to be there. Mm-hmm. And he's just an awesome playmaker. I love that they're leaning on him this early. Because they should. They're a really good player. They spent a high draft pick on him. And they are using him accordingly. I think Brock Bowers is very much going to be in the Offensive Rookie of the Year conversation.
Okay.
I think I wrote Offensive Player of the Year on my sheet.
Oh,
probably
rookie.
Not that.
No.
But Offensive Rookie of the Year for sure.
Yep.
I think he'll be in that convo. We're going to be in the break convo. We got a second hour coming up. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We got more 49ers coming up for you. We got a bigger NFL conversation to have, because NFL offensive output is going down, and we're going to tell you why. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.